and popular among the fundamentalists, I would say. We're going to go right on over to Nehemiah. I thought about not going straight from Ezra to Nehemiah, but then decided, well, if you're going to do one, you might as well do the other. Thing to remember with this, Ezra was responsible for coming back and building the temple, right? Or at least Ezra, the book of Ezra at least narrates that scenario where Ezra comes in, not until Ezra chapter 7 after the temple was built, and begins to rule in the land and such. Now, Nehemiah is something different. Nehemiah comes in sometime after Ezra does. The walls of Jerusalem are not built. They're torn down. Everything's still burnt and rubble. And so Nehemiah comes in to rebuild the wall and really to more or less repopulate the city. Now, the point with that is, here you have Ezra comes in with this holy, sanctified job. His job is to do this spiritual thing, this rebuilding of the temple, reestablishment of the proper order of worship and all that stuff, okay? Nehemiah has a much, more mundane job. His job is to come in and just build a wall and essentially to repopulate the city, okay? My point in saying all that is to say, in order for what you've done, what somebody's done, somebody who works a work, spiritually a sanctified work, the building of this temple, the reestablishment of the ritual and order and such, there's somebody that has to build a wall. There's somebody that has to scrub a toilet, right? And there's somebody that has to come back and farm the fields and plow and plant and harvest and do relatively mundane work. These guys, for a long time, in the book of Nehemiah, just come back. They're digging around in the rubble. They're just trying to clear stuff out so they can restructure the walls, rebuild the parts that are just torn down, completely restructure some of it. The point is, yes, you have the very sanctified work of certain offices. You do need a pastor. You do need a deacon. You need an associate pastor and such. But folks, somebody's got to mow the lawn. Somebody's got to change the church sign. Somebody has to scrub a toilet. Somebody has to sweep and clean. Don't look down on those jobs. Those things are something special. Nehemiah gets his own book in the Bible. All he's doing is rebuilding the wall. What he did is just as sanctified and consecrated as what Ezra did. Right? Ladies and gentlemen, we're all needed. You have something to do. When God gives you something to do, gives you even an opportunity like Nehemiah to volunteer for the job, take the job serious. Well, all I do is scrub toilets. Well, all I do is mow the lawn. All you do? Well, how would the place look if nobody mowed the lawn? What would people do if they went in and the bathroom was completely caked and nasty? You think folks are going to come back to your church then? I rather think not. And that's the point. Look in Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1. Nehemiah 1:1. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. And it came to pass in the month Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. So he's asking about those guys that had escaped out of the captivity. By that I mean, they were sent by the king to redo what they did back in Ezra. He said, how are they doing? Well, the word isn't too well, too good. Verse 3, they said to me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down. The gates thereof are burned with fire. They have the temple rebuilt. They are worshiping and sacrificing at the temple. Everything surrounding the temple is all shoddy. It is torn down. The walls are shot. There are many enemies about. They're not doing well at all, Nehemiah. They're really not. Verse 4. And it came to pass when I had heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, and that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned." This guy is praying somewhat like Ezra prayed back in Ezra chapter 9. Verse 7, "We, the Israelites, have dealt very corruptly against thee, have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments, which thou commandedst thy servant Moses. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandedst thy servant Moses, saying, If ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. But if you turn unto me and keep my commandments and do them, though there were of you cast out into the uttermost part of the heaven, yet will I gather them from thence, and will bring them into the place that I have chosen to set my name there. Now these are thy servants and thy people, whom thou hast redeemed by thy great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, to the prayer of thy servants, who desire to fear thy name and prosper, who desire to fear thy name and prosper. I pray thee, thy servant this day, grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer." He's saying, I stand before the king every day. Lord, grant me mercy in the sight of this man. Make something happen in the sight of this man. He's the king. He can change this. Chapter 2, verse 1. Sometimes you pray prayers, and I wonder if you really wonder whether God will answer them. You know, I'm sure Nehemiah looked for this opportunity, but I've been guilty of praying prayers and then being, I'm ashamed to say it, surprised when I get an answer. That ought not be the way we pray, right? You ought to be able to pray expectantly. And I know there's a lot of disappointments when you pray expectantly, because you pray and pray and it seems like nothing happens. About the time you start praying, not expecting something to happen, that something does happen. And by the grace of God, you should be ashamed. Because you should pray expectantly. Your God is alive, your God hears, and your God can do anything He wants. Right? Chapter 2, verse 1. "It came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine, gave it unto the king." Now this is the 20th year of Artaxerxes. To give you an idea of where these guys fall in line, if you'll go back to Ezra 7. Ezra 7 is the chapter where Ezra actually shows up on the scene. And notice that in verse 7, this is the 7th year of Artaxerxes the king. So the way this falls is that Ezra is commissioned, comes back to Jerusalem, and is there for a while before Nehemiah shows up. Nehemiah in 2:1 gets this commission in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king. "Wine was before him. I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then was I very sore afraid." Okay? Why is Nehemiah afraid? Because the king doesn't want a long face in his presence. Hey, you pouting? I'll kill you, man. Something like that. Or it could be also that he's scared because now he's at a position where he's prayed this prayer. King has basically given him a wide open door to say what he needs to say, and maybe that's scary. Because sometimes you get to that position, you prayed to get a chance to propose to this girl, and now it's finally time and you're really scared. Okay, maybe that was a bad example, but whatever. So I was very sore afraid, but probably because the king has let it be known, or perhaps the chief of staff has let it known, do not go in the presence of this king with a long, drawn-out donkey face. Don't go in there acting all sad and stuff. You put a smile on your face and act cheerful before this king, or else he's going to have your head. Verse 3. Then was I very sore afraid, the end of verse 2, and said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? Well, that was quick. I mean, what's wrong with you? Why you said, why should not I be sad? The sepulchres of my fathers are lying waste. Well, what do you want to do? Right? Then the famous Nehemiah prayer, so I prayed unto the God of heaven. You better learn to pray like Nehemiah, which is, somebody says something to you, you don't know quite what to answer, so you throw up a Nehemiah prayer, God help me. And his answer, verse 5, and I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldst send me into Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. Well, that's kind of a big one, you know. Well, king says, hey, well, okay, what do you want to do? You're sad, what do you want to do? Well, I want to go back and take a bunch of a crew with me and rebuild the wall. Oh, well, okay, how much money you need? Right? Verse 6. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thy journey be? I mean, basically he's saying, yes, how long are you going to be gone? And when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah. In other words, I don't want to just leave here, go cross the river, and then these guys wind up hijacking me and waylaying me, beating me to death, and stealing all the stuff. You write me a writing of passage so that they will let me go. They know that you're behind me. Verse 8. And a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which appertaineth to the house, for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the goodness of my God upon me. So the king gave him his answer. Questions or comments? Yes, sir, Todd. Yeah. Right. I don't know. Never thought about that. I don't know. Anything else? Brother Jeremy. Okay. Okay. So there's some birthday cake back there left over from Jasmine's birthday. So y'all partake. I missed that. I'm sorry. Oh, that other day? Okay. We're glad you're better, Jasmine. Anything else? Let's sing one more before we go. Let's turn to number 439. 439.